Blog Talk Radio.
Was it a catch or not? We're going to talk about that tonight. The fiasco in Pittsburgh. We got bowl season coming, and they retired not one, but two jerseys in L.A. for the man they call the Mamba, Kobe Bryant.
This is RSG with D. Wells. I'm here at AT&T Stadium in Dallas, Texas. Michigan is Florida.
Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We hail.
There is a pause throughout the stadium as the man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around. The Jumbotron shows and pans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Drup.
Yes. Today,
this
one mic.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
All right, welcome to One Mic. This is Devon Wilson, one half of the crew here. The host and all callers are brought to you by Carbon World Health, your complete solution for fitness, health, and beauty. Go to carbonworldhealth.com to connect with Dr. Nestor Rodriguez and his staff to learn more about lifestyle medicine. Tell them that the Real Sports Guy sent you. Follow us and like us at realsportsguys.com. RSG One Mic with D. Wilson. Hank, we thank you for spending the time with us. And before I go, it's been a long time since we last talked to all of y'all. And it's good to have back, you know, my version of the Stockton Malone, our Karl Malone, Hank Davis. How you doing, Hank?
I'm doing well, D. It's good to be back on the air with you. I want to take this opportunity to wish all of our listeners out there a very Merry Christmas, you know, a very Happy New Year. Listen, man, this is the time of the year, man, where, you know, people spend so much time getting all their houses all dressed up and, you know, putting all the decorations and the lights and, you know, the power company just love everybody. That they just be grinning. They just know all that money just going right to them at this time of the year. Oh, they just love it. But you know what? We should take the time, man, and just, you know, just really reflect upon the reason for the season. And really the reason for the season is the spirit of giving, the spirit of being with family, being with friends, you know, being blessed to get to the end of another year. You know, for you and I to be able to really reflect upon and talk about, you know, all the things we've been able to share together and to talk about and to look at and to witness, and we're going to do that, you know, from a sports perspective and other perspectives. But again, man, it's just a blessing, you know, and it's good to be alive, and it's good to be here with you tonight and just to really talk about, you know, things that we love to talk about in depth and in detail.
I think that's one of the things I always say. You got to do something that you're passionate about. And I look forward to when I get on the air with you, or if I get a chance to get on the air with Phil and Marcus. It's just this whole crew is made this journey special. And I think, you know, for those people who come, who listen to us, who've been following us, following the underground, the resistance, as Marcus would say, I think, you know, we try to give you our best every time we reach on the air. And we hopefully that you feel that way. You know, I am thankful, and I do want to send a shout out to a couple people, that I just want to recognize who, I've been connecting with lately. I'm trying to do that. So I have a young man, Tayshawn Banks, from Beloit, Wisconsin, who loves basketball. I told him I sent a shout out to him. So, Tayshaun, hopefully you catch this. If not, I will send it to you. We're going to work on your game. We'll get you connected with somebody. Keep pushing and stay on those books. And then we want to give one to one of our guys who's been on here on the air, who's making his way up the MMA ladder, Alton the Boatman Cunningham. He had an incredible TKO in his first televised event on Access TV this past weekend. I had a chance to watch it on TV and watch him live. I've been connecting with him, and we're definitely going to have him on. But if you've been a longtime listener, we started out with him from the beginning as he was making his debut, and he's checked in with us, and now he's 4-0. And he's in a space where he can go to Bellator or he can go to UFC. And that's what people do when they do well in this space that he's in right now. You know, one or two more victories there, he gets a belt. In the way that he's doing it, he could be being on somebody's main event here pretty soon. So I do want to send a shout out. I know he's been working hard. He's been grinding, getting a lot of support from Dr. Rodriguez over there at Carbon World Health. He's one of the sponsor athletes over there as well. And so, you know, we always like, you know, I said, we, you know, when I started this show, I said I want it to be a lot like Sway and Tech. All you guys from hip hop would understand that. Like nobody, everybody who was somebody early in the day went through that Sway and Tech show out there in L.A. and before when they were in the Bay Area. You know, that's where Eminem freestyled. That's where Biggie made a debut. That's where Jay-Z was even on there. Everybody, that's kind of how we've been. We've been that show. We've been that show that cats catch on and they move up. You've had a chance to hear Tony Cantillana. Tony was with us when he was a youngster. Now he's on ESPN, Madison. He's done podcasts with some big folks like Windhorse and all that. So, you know, people start out with us and then they make their move. And that's how we want it to be. That's how we want Stu to catch people on the way up. And so we definitely want to show the Boatman some love. But tonight, there's a lot going on, man. We're going to have some fun. And we're going to spend this first segment as we bless the mic, kind of tapping into some of the current events, things that just happened recently. And there's a lot that's been going on recently. It's been crazy. Even as we were putting the rundown together, stuff was getting updated. So we might have to update and talk as we go. But let's start with the most obvious one. There's a lot of obvious. I shouldn't say that. There's so much craziness going on. But tonight, they retired Kobe Bean Bryant, the Black Mamba. Not one jersey. See, this was Kobe's, like, not one jersey, but they're going to retire two jerseys. I don't even know if they retired two jerseys for Michael. I don't know if they retired the 45 and the 23. I thought they just retired the 23. But for him, they retired the 8 and the 24, and there's been a lot of debate, which Kobe do you like, the Kobe who wore the 8, Kobe who wore the 24. But I think we just want to put, you know, I feel like even I, and I know Game Changer has been a critic, I would have to give Phil T., probably the most credit for really trying to respect and put Kobe. But I think even as I reflect a little bit more on Kobe's career got away with, I don't know if we've appreciated what this young man has done from day one to his last day. And I heard Stephen A. Smith, who's talked a lot about it, passionately about Kobe today, sharing his thoughts. And Kobe gave none. He gave none, and he gave everything. He pushed people. He wasn't out there to be liked. He's out there to win. And some people try to compare Westbrook to him, but I don't think you can. I mean, I think some ways Westbrook has that killer instinct, but Kobe not only had a killer instinct, but he also understood at a certain point he couldn't do it alone and made adjustments to be able to find ways to incorporate some of his players, particularly after he split with Shaq. But tonight, he's being honored. And in fact, Steve Kerr, you know, this is quintessential Steve Kerr, who gets it right. He was like, I'm not going to halftime when I know all my players are thinking about they'd love to be out there to see this legend be honored. We're not even going to go in. We're going to stay out here and witness it, and then we'll play the second half. To me, like, that is somebody who's not short-sighted. Like knows that he has some young players, and also he has some players who themselves want to be in that spot, want to have that moment. And he's seeing this as even each a teachable moment for somebody like Durant and somebody like Curry, who can still grow, who are still searching to be in that space, to be able to dream about that moment and to be able to visualize that. He sees the benefit of that to his team. And so, you know, Hank, I know we talk a lot about a lot of stuff, but I want to give you, as you know, somebody who's seen a lot of basketball over a lot of years, over multiple generations, to be able to put Kobe's career in perspective.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of folks out there that, including myself, that somewhat underestimated Kobe Bryant and Kobe Bryant's impact to the L.A. Lakers. It was Shaq's team when they started winning championships, or folks will lead you to believe it was Shaq's team. But what Kobe Bryant did after Shaq left the Lakers after the 2004 season, I think is what really personifies his legacy as a leader and a Hall of Famer. Because, you know, for those who don't know, the real big beef between Shaq and Kobe was the fact that Kobe didn't feel like Shaq got himself ready to play. And Kobe got himself ready to play all the time. And, you know, they were trying to make Kobe Bryant the next Michael Jordan before LeBron James. Okay, the way he was trying to be a leader, the way he was trying to, you know, really lead by example. I got to give him that. Many basketball fans remember the 82-point game that he had. And that went with mixed emotions. Folks were saying that he now is a selfish player. But only thing Kobe did was try to win. Now, you could ask the question, did he try to win at the expense of the Lakers? I would say no. But true to form in L.A. fashion, what they've done is stir up the drama, stir up the debate by retiring both of those numbers, okay, the 24 and the 8. Now, what folks fail to realize is when they want to say what's going on with Michael Jordan and why didn't they retire both of his numbers. Well, you got to understand, the number 45 that he came back with, he was allowed to go back to number 23. All right? So when he was able to go back to 23, that made the number 45 null and void. All right? So that's what folks don't understand. Well, Kobe actually made the change because he wanted to make the change. The league wouldn't allow Michael Jordan to come back at number 23. So once they allowed that to happen for him, that's why that's the difference there. But to your point, one thing about Kobe Bryant, you can say whatever you want to say, but he spent his entire career with the L.A. Lakers, which is a big deal for some fans, all right? And he won championships, and he was one of the best that ever did it until it was over and done with. So just to put a nice little neat bow on it, I think it's great. I think both numbers should be retired because he did that on his own, and there's debates now. If you look at the metrics between which player was better, the number 8 or the number 24, it's a compelling argument. I would like to see them play. I would like to see number 24 play number 8 in one-on-one if you're listening out there, PlayStation.
So the thing about that that's so funny, thing I crack up about, so funny about that is, you know, Kobe, this is when I knew it was something about him. Because at first, you know, when he came out, you know, a lot of guys, you know, a lot of my guys in Rockford, we debate in the bar, and they get mad at me because I call the Duke kids. Even if Phil T gets mad at me, he tried to correct me. I call them camp kids. The difference between cats who play at the playground and camp kids. So when I first got to see Kobe coming from Europe, all that stuff, I was thought, okay, this is a kid that's upper middle class, upper kid that is, you know, that kid that particularly at that time, you know, wanted to get people to understand that he had that it, that particularly at that time of hip hop and that he was down. I mean, I saw a lot of, you know, as a college administrator, I saw a lot of middle class, upper middle class, particularly kids of color, get in trouble because they were trying to prove to cats who came from working class backgrounds that they were down. And then they ended up funking out because they just didn't have it. And so at first I was like, not quite sure about this kid. But I remember that Utah series. And he came down. It took, what, one or two or three straight shots, air ball. But he took them with confidence. And I said, okay, this is a cat that has a short memory. At a time when he got grown men who look like they don't want to shoot the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that told me a lot about his desire, right? And over the years, I started to see how reflective he was, but at the same time, how dogged he was about preparation. And, you know, I just got to appreciate that. So, you know, I know Game Changer as he has major criticisms about Kobe in terms of when we start to talk about that little tiny room and about where he has him on his list compared to LeBron and some others. But this is a cat who played both ends, was a lead at both ends. I'm big on that. I'm big on that when you start to get to that elite there. I think that's right. Some of what separates sometimes Jordan from other folks is that one thing I'll say about MJ, and, you know, you and I are Pistons fans and everything. And there are times when we felt like he got some calls he didn't deserve. But the one thing about Mike is athletic and as dominant he could be athletically, he was never too cool for school. He was never too cool to dive on the floor. Even though his shorts look nice or whatever, if you watch Mike was never too cool to not do the right thing, right? He wasn't trying to look too cool. He was always playing. He was always right position. I think Kobe was that cat, never too cool for school, didn't care about what everybody thought about. You knew I've watched the NBA enough to watch cats who could have been great but was too cool for school.
Right.
You know, they were trying to look too nice when they shouldn't have been afraid to get dirty. And on both ends, wasn't afraid that somebody might shake them up because that wasn't what about. I mean, even with that Iverson crossover of Mike, it was because Mike wasn't worried about being too cool for school. He was up for the challenge. Whereas,
right.
You know, and sometimes that's – I even have – you know, I love LeBron. But even not being in the dunk contest because of what it might look like, neither Mike or Kobe worried about that.
No, they did.
They didn't worry about losing. They just worried, they just loved to compete. And I think that's something that I've always appreciated. That's that when we use the phrase dog meter, Kobe's on that Mount Rushmore dog meter. Can't nobody question his dog meter at all.
I mean,
go ahead.
I guess Kobe, to a certain extent, was a throwback. Okay, and that's what you're saying. That you're going back to the time before the NBA, in my opinion, had gotten somewhat soft. You had players that weren't afraid to play in the paint or play outside. And that's where there was a lot of similarities between Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan, because Kobe could do it both. And Kobe could go to the hole on you, and you would get posterized in a heartbeat, and you didn't think that was coming from him. He wasn't just a jump shooter. I mean, he had a complete game. And that's what you're talking about, that being too cool for school. He would get dirty and then down and get ready. And that's one thing that if you're an old-school basketball fan, that you appreciated about his game.
Yeah, he gonna set – that's one thing I tell you about Mike, too. People forget, Mike understood that you could screen to an open shot. And Kobe understands that. You know, most people are like – a lot of kids don't like setting screens because they think that's the dirty work. Great shooters, great offensive players love to screen because screen creates openings.
Mm-hmm.
And I always watch development of players. And when I see players who are great scorers or offensive players who also like to screen, even Reggie Miller understood how a screen helped create a shot for him. A lot of times he would go screen, not just be screened for. And so when I watched him and understood, he understood that concept and how that created offense for him. By doing some of those things and switching up. I mean, so it's little things like that he understood about the game. And part of that was him developing and growing and learning how to play that game in Europe, right? Where, you know, our great basketball minds went over to Europe and did a lot of clinics and taught a lot of coaches. They start taking that stuff, and then we just forgot to teach that. And then all the European players know it. Now they come over here knowing how to do all of it. And now we got to get back to the basics. AAU, we don't teach that. But they do a lot of Europe. And so that's what he was benefiting from, that style of game. And in some ways, that allowed him to accelerate, you know, not only be athletic, be great, but understand the game is played from the neck up. And I think that's where he had the biggest problem with Shaq, who is smart and brilliant in all the other ways. Shaq knows basketball, smart, got a great mind, understands concepts, picked up triangle and all that stuff, was great as a big man in that, but didn't understand how just, you know, giving yourself, being in shape, being a little bit ahead of it would have just made you even much more of a dominant force. Don't give up any edge. Like Kobe's right. Like, don't give up any edge. Don't give anybody any edge, right? Take away everything they have. Don't even make them think that they can't even touch you. And I think that part of that competitiveness is what puts him in that conversation. And he's got 5 titles, 2 without Shaq, 2 back-to-back, 3 straight finals. One, you know, he was going up against a big 3 who was on fire with that Boston team,
right.
With Garnett and them. And trying to go at it with a team he was trying to teach how to win. And so, you know, having 2 jerseys retired tonight, you know, a lot of people will be talking for years. You know, he's a polarizing figure with that. You know, a lot of people will come back at, but, you know, as a just a straight basketball fan, you know, I miss him. I miss having somebody who gets after it like that every night. With a response, like Russ gets after every night, but he'll get at it with the responsibility that it takes to win. Whereas Kobe would be with that same squad that you got, he got right now. Kobe probably would have their team would probably be at the top of the West with Carmelo and your guy on the squad. He would have him at the top of the West. And so sometimes you got to give up a little piece to get something. And that's the part that Westbrook is still learning, that Kobe understood.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Westbrook is still concerned about Westbrook, even at crunch time. And he has proven to be a great regular season player.
Yeah.
Okay? He's yet to really show what he's going to do in the playoffs, where Kobe excelled in the playoffs. Okay?
Excelled in the playoffs. And got other players to excel in the playoffs.
Exactly.
Created space for Paul Gasol and them to get
exactly.
what they get. You know,
right.
Knew when he needed to be the setup guy. And
right.
I think that's the part that Westbrook hasn't figured out. I mean, the Philly game was a great example of that. Is you got Carmelo going, you know, finding ways. Because this is what Kobe understood, and I think Westbrook is still learning. You can get your shot anytime. That's not what it's about.
Right.
You can get your shot anytime. Given that you can get your shot anytime, how do you make for easy shots for Carmelo and George? Because that's going to make it easy for you every night. If they get going every night, then you get your shot anytime, right? And Kobe understood, I get Powell going, I get these guys going. You can't double-team me. You can't double-team me when these guys are going. It's going to be harder for you to double-team me when these guys are going. Because
right.
you got to stay home and stay honest. If you got to stay home and stay honest, you're in trouble. You know, and I think that's the part of the game, you know, when people try to compare Westbrook to Kobe that Westbrook hasn't quite gotten yet. But Kobe evolved, and he evolved through failing. He failed, reflect, came back better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, whereas Westbrook comes back harder the same. It's kind of like working with a student who says, I'm just going to work harder. Nah, you got to work smarter.
Right.
Right? And I think that's what Kobe understood, how to make those kind of adjustments. So we'll talk more about that. We'll file that story. We'll hear a lot more. Some of you are probably watching, checking it out. This next one we want to catch here as we bless the mic here in this opening segment. What you listen to Real Sports Guys, RSG One Mic. We're in that first second bless the mic tonight. You know, probably another 15 minutes. We're going to be hitting up and getting a little bit more deep into some of the NFL talk and then some of the bowl games and some of the reflections on what's happened with this bowl season. But right now we just finished talking about Kobe Bryant. And I also want to, as we start moving into a little football, Carolina Panthers owner is set to sell the team. This is something that, many people are anticipating. Jerry Richardson has been a fire rod, if you think lightning rod, excuse me, if you kind of think a little bit about it, there are some claims of in this climate that has been evolving. You know, sports has not been as much a part of this conversation around sexual assault, sexual harassment, but he's also been someone who one of the former scouts who happened to be African American had said that he used a racial slur to him, that he ended up just walking away. And I remember when he was having some comments about all this issue with the kneeling, somebody, I don't know who said it, who played for him, said that we just in the same way they talk about McNair, who owned Houston, was, or the Texans, was, you know, this kind of this good old boy, you know, and, you know, some of these Southern things, and he says some things, and so now he's selling the team. I guess there's reports on Twitter that Diddy say, let me buy it. And so there's a lot of buzz about, you know, who, you know, Sean Combs is, I think, one of the first of this hip-hop mogul generation, I think, is, if he hasn't reached it, is going to be a billionaire. And so, and he's, you know, he's putting his name in the hat to buy the Panthers. That's what he's kind of claiming. I wouldn't put it past him. I wouldn't put it past Jay-Z and some other folks as well. So this guy, man, and this has been a franchise that's been a solid franchise, man. If you gotta think about it, when they first came in and came out the gate, started winning. I think he played the game. I think he's the former player, I want to think. And so, you know, what's your perspective on what we're hearing out of Carolina, and then also how this is playing in this larger landscape, you know, given all the stuff with Ray Rice and everything else around this? Now we see folks in ownership begin to get affected. And then you hear Jerry Jones saying, we need more guys like this guy. I mean, Jerry just doesn't get it, man. I don't know. NFL, I'm convinced just the NFL leadership just doesn't get it, but we'll leave it alone. What are you thinking about what you're hearing around this idea that he's going to be selling and he's going to be controlling? This guy's just going to make more money. So it's not like he's walking away with nothing. He's actually going to walk away with probably $1 billion. But what's been your perspective on as you've heard this story unfold?
My perspective is just what you just got through saying. Okay, and that is that I'm going to take a moral issue that's on the front page every day, and I'm going to use it to parlay this into more money by selling this football team. Look, let's not just look at this at the surface, D. Let's look at this for what we've been talking about all year, okay? This whole civil unrest that's going on with the NFL, okay, has really, really hit in the pocketbook of these owners. All right, attendance is down and viewing audiences are down. All right, and all of a sudden you got this man down south. He ain't gonna change his ways, okay. And if anybody think he gonna change his ways, I got some land here. I got some beachfront property right here in southeast Michigan with the sun shining at 80 degrees right now. You can get it for a nickel. All right? That's what I'm trying to get you to understand. I trust him as far as I can throw him left-handed with a broken elbow. All right? This is about money. So what can I get for this? This is a buy and sell. This is the stock market all over, okay? You sell high, all right? So this is what he's doing, all right? Anybody who is a good businessman has to ask the question, okay, what are you forecasting for your team right now in this climate that is the NFL? All right, some very interesting things have been happening with this league, and a lot of it is really leaning towards the negative. All right, I don't even want to get into the whole sexual harassment. I didn't call somebody a racial slur. These cats have been doing that, you know, that didn't start this season. All right, so they've been saying what they want to say anytime they want to because money talks, BS walks. We know that. So let's not even act like, oh, okay, this is a moral thing. No, this is a money thing. And it's based upon the climate of the NFL. And so I'm going to sell my team. I've got me a championship caliber team right now. This is a way for me to get out from underneath, make me some money, let some poor sap take over this, and I get out. That's what I think it is. I think you nailed it on the head with your last comment. I think that everything else has been, see, we've heard way too much from Jerry Jones. We heard too much from these other owners that said that the owner at the Houston Texans owner, I mean, come on. This isn't brand new. Okay, you got billionaires that don't need to have a filter. All right, and if the league is not going to push him to sell the team as the NBA did with the Clippers owner, then this is a money grab. And if you think that is anything else, then you are as gullible as the individual who will come and buy this land here in Michigan.
And what's crazy about this is, so then Kaepernick tweets, yeah, I want in on the ownership group. Let's make it happen. And Diddy has this, he said this picture was taken back, and he has a picture, I guess I have to click on this. This is God's work. It's time. Attention, all NFL owners, it's time for diversity. It's time for black ownership. This time is now. Let's make it happen. Diddy serious. Now Kaepernick's like, let me put me in on the ownership group. He got it, you know, and you know he can pull the money together. So it's interesting because I think one of the things that, in some ways, NFL needs a Diddy. Like one of the things about something about the NFL owners, even though they got some cats, you know, which we just talked about, who have their own set of issues. It just seems like the NFL owners, like for a long time, I thought baseball owners might be the ones who are out, but the NFL owners make baseball owners look like they new age hippies. It's just like they allow at least the voices feel like they are so behind the eight ball. They don't understand what's going on behind the times. And they, in a combination with a commissioner who doesn't have any cool points. Like now he's third at cool points. I think Manafort is moving up. He's trying to find innovative ways for the game of baseball. And then I think NBA is probably at the top in terms of their commissioner. So it's like, and you could even move it down further than that if we really got down to it, in terms of a commissioner that can actually move something and got the trust of his players and can move and ownership who get it. So you're right. I mean, they're at all the golden goose at some point run out. Like, it's not going to happen all day. And like you said, there are signs, slow signs, that if you don't pay attention to it, you'll look up and you'll be sliding way down the hill. And so this is an opportunity to see what kind of leadership Goodell has, opportunity where you got somebody like Diddy or some other folks where you can bring in new faces at a time who can be the future owners of the league, right? It opens up an opportunity to think about how you might have former players who might want to be in this space. And so, it's good to have, you know, people working in the league office, but what about folks in ownership? And so you're right. I mean, I think I just don't think they got the leadership. I think, you know, Jerry Jones and them is they want to go to the cookouts with the cats who look like them. Some of the oil cats who could be at their, who could have been at their oil parties. And so that's just kind of how they rock. And without a commissioner who can say, hey, we need to be thinking out ahead of this, I just don't think Goodell has a room like that. And that's the problem. But this
I can't really say the problem I got with the ownership groups of a Diddy or a Jay-Z or even a Kaepernick, this is still a good old boy network in the NFL, and owners have got to approve ownership. You have to ask yourself a legitimate question: is would this ownership group of these owners approve a minority ownership? Okay, you don't really have a progressive thinking commissioner. What you have is a puppet, all right? You have a power-hungry puppet that's going to do the bidding of those owners, right? So if you've got that, how in the world do you think they're going to be able to push through any sort of minority ownership in the NFL? All right, you've got folks like the Lions owner who's 102 years old or older. They're not going to sell that team to an owner. You know, you just there's a thing about it. Okay, it's a country club mentality. Do you know this? All right, so while you're saying, yeah, the NFL needs to be progressive in what they're doing, and they need somebody like that, and I agree with you, they do. They need somebody like that. The NFL, I mean, the NBA has figured it out, and Major League Baseball has figured it out too, all right? But now you got the NFL that feels like this is old money, right? We only going to sell to somebody who look like us, who sound like us, and this is the problem. And they're going to have to go backwards a few more steps before anything like that happens, unless you just don't have a taker. Or you're just going to have somebody who's going to try to have some sort of minority ownership and try to do some sort of hostile takeover. Other than that, you're going to have that old boy network that's going to penetrate that.
Well, I think what a possibility happens, and I think Mark Cuban said this best, you know, even with the decision they made to go with the Jeter Group, which – you know, as Mark Cuban said, you can't go with a group that's cash poor and expect winning decisions. And the one thing you know about a group that Diddy's come with, they're not going to be cash poor. The other thing is, don't be surprised if part of his plan is to bring Michael Jordan into it. That puts political pressure. You already got him owning even as a minority, and I don't know what the rules are with that, but I think he could probably do it, even on the minority. Even if he was a minority person with stake in it, Mike brings money, and Mike brings pull in Carolina, right? And so I wouldn't be surprised if he'd already got a conversation with Jordan and some other folks about how he could put this deal together. You know, the one thing I know about Diddy is that you never enter that and say no. Diddy could pull something where he might have Cuban as a minority deal in there, so that now you got an operation that's not cash poor, which is appealing to anybody, right? The crazy thing about like somebody like Diddy, you don't know what Diddy's relationship is with somebody like Jerry Jones. You know, this is a cat that rolls with a lot of circles. He might have a positive lead. He might be able to pick a phone up with Tall Jerry and be like, "Hey, man, let's do this." So, you know, I think there's some things that a guy like that who's in circles, who you normally wouldn't think were in some of those circles, where he has friends across, that's how he successfully built his empire in different ways. He's very much diversified. And so there's folks that he's doing business in space that where some of those other owners would love to have access into those spaces. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, man, because, you know, he's the one guy who comes to the table who's not cash poor. He's one guy who's coming to the table, and he's the kind of guy who can bring people around him who got money, which at the end of the day, the NFL loves that idea of having money. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. But like you said, the crazy thing about it is the penalty for this guy, when you know, people like, you know, Weinstein and all these other guys are the empires are crumbling. He going to walk away with $1 billion.
Right.
Easily.
Right.
Which makes this ridiculous. All right. So the big matchup happened. Everybody been talking about it for weeks. They got it on. You had Bell out there running like an old school joint, just killing it. You had the Steelers revealing their whole man-to-man defense concept that held it together for a while. You had Brady doing what he was doing. You had the Pats D making a play right there at the end. Questionable call to tight end Jesse James. Looked like he got across the line. Looked like he had control. But a rule where at every other level of football is a touchdown, at the highest level with the highest level of skill is not a touchdown. And then we have Roethlisberger. I don't know what Roethlisberger was doing, trying to run the fake. Everybody could see that coming. Nobody else ran a route. And you had Martavis Bryant killing him. And all you had to do was throw a fade route to him. And if he didn't get it, then it's out of bounds. You kick the field goal, go into overtime, see if you can win. You had a dropped interception that when you knew when he dropped it that there was a touchdown coming. That's kind of how it was going. It was a crazy day in football with the Pats. What say you, Hank Davis?
Well, you know what? It was a very well anticipated game. Okay, it was one that really, if you think about it, it epitomizes what's going on with the NFL this year. Okay, what's going on with the NFL? Period. You had two marquee teams, story teams, playing for what could be the best record in the AFC. You had well anticipated. You had Tom Brady, who owned Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh got off to a great start in that game, and it looked like they were going to finally exercise those demons. But wait a minute. They got to play against the GOAT. So they had all the high drama. It came down to the last possession. That's what we all wanted. That's what we waited to see. And then the league got in the way again. The league got in the way again. I am sick of this rule, man. This rule... It was bad enough when it happened to Bryant with the Cowboys.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Against the Packers, when he actually caught the ball, made a move to the end zone, and they called it an incomplete pass. You know, it gets to the point where, okay, when is it too much? All right? And the league, I think what drives the fans crazy is the league has done nothing. I mean absolutely nothing to modify this rule. Okay, this whole in the process thing is ignorant, okay? And for them to really overthink this thing like this to the point where now it's impacting the product on the field, you know, this is where people are really had enough with the NFL. Okay, that was a marquee game. That was one of those games where you had everybody who watches the NFL was watching that game. They were watching that game. And they watch the league and its rules, and those rules are so convoluted and they're so ridiculous that it ruined what should have been a good win, a great win for Pittsburgh, and a way, actually, when you think about the drama, the high drama that is Roger Goodell and the New England Patriots, a way for them to stick it to Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. But no. Their rules got in the way, absolutely butchered a fabulous game, took it away from Pittsburgh, and they need to look at that because, again, if you can't trust what your eyes see on the field, you know, then you're really taking the fun away from watching the game. I mean, it should not be that technical. It absolutely, positively should not be that technical.
Yeah, they definitely make it. I mean, when it should just be 1 + 1 = 2, they make it a calculus. I mean, he made a football move. He reached out. He broke the plane. That's a touchdown. Anything you break in the plane should already automatically say that's a touchdown. I could have handled the knee was down and just have it down where the knee went down. But to say that wasn't a catch is ridiculous. And when it's a catch at every other level, peewee, high school football, college football, but it's not a catch here. Y'all complicating it too much. And I feel like they're trying to make up for the tuck rule. I feel like every time I see one of these calls, like the NFL is still trying to make up for the tuck rule for the Patriots. It's like reparations. Like they're giving Belichick and Brady reparations on that tuck rule every time these things come out. It was a one time, and I know you will understand this as a Pistons fan. I felt like I was in the Boston Garden and there was a leprechaun in there going, Google Puffs. I don't know what it was, but it was something going on. The leprechaun was waving a wand. I just felt like I was about to see Larry Bird come out of there with some short shorts and catch a touchdown. And then Gronk had the clown on him on the touchdown, knocked Davis down, looked at him, started laughing. And Davis dropped the interception that could have turned it around. You know, and I'm like, but I'm also saying Steelers double cover Gronk. At what point do you think you could put Mitchell over the top and double cover him and just single cover Cooks? If Cooks beats you, he beats you. but don't let Gronk beat you. So there was so much that was wrong with that, but it felt like Burr stole the ball. Burr stole the ball. I felt like I was watching
really
that moment, man. I said, oh, and the look on Tomlin's face was like, I can't believe he did that. Can't believe he threw that. He threw a slant route with everybody sitting there, with only one person going out. It was so much wrong with that final sequence, but you're right. I mean, it's just a bad call altogether. Roger Goodell doing a whole bunch of stuff, getting paid a whole bunch of money. Get your rules committee to clean this up. You know, other sports have cleaned up stuff. This is one that's easy. Let's clean it up.
Uh-huh.
Make it reflect. If they can figure out college, they can figure out in high school, they can figure out in Pee Wee. We should be able to. These are supposed to be the best referees in the world. They should be able to get the same thing right in the NFL.
It's not the referees. It's the rules committee. Okay, all of those calls go upstairs, right? They're all going upstairs. They're subject to review. It's the rules committee. All right, the referees make a call on the field, and in most cases, you can argue they're the right call. Then it goes upstairs, and some knucklehead, like I said, with a calculus, trigonometry, whatever you want to call it, comes up with some reason why it's not a catch. And it drives people crazy because you're looking at it, okay, in every decade with the exception of this one, as a touchdown. And the NFL, what drives you really mad is they insult your intelligence on why the rule is what it is. And it drives folks crazy. They can fix it. If they quit trying to be the smartest knucklehead in the room, they can fix it.
And the thing about it is, even with the current rule, they got it wrong. Because there's four scenarios, two of which happen in this scenario. One is, did you transition from a receiver to a runner? He clearly did that when he caught and turned and reached for the end zone. That's when he transitioned from catching the ball to becoming a runner, because he took the motion of turning and extending. And did he extend without the ground breaking the ball? He had to catch and extend it and broke the plane without the ground breaking the ball in the motion. So the ground didn't break the ball until after he broke the plane. And so even with their current rules, they got it wrong. They should send a letter of apology. And so I think that's the part that just throws me. It feels like, again, one of them Boston Garden calls. Red Allback is up there smoking a cigar or something, waving a magic wand. Yeah, I felt like they turned Hines Ward into the Garden, Hines Field into the Garden. I thought I saw a parquet floor there in the end zone. That's what I felt like. And
Let me add this too, D. Is that, you know, that's the second time in a big game where a player has made a move, right, with the ball, and for some reason the league claims that they didn't finish the process. I don't understand that. I wish they could help us understand, as common folk, common fans, how can you turn up the field and not have completed the process?
I'm saying this, that if 10 people look at that play and 8 or 9 of them say it's a touchdown, which probably happened, unless you somewhere in Massachusetts or Boston, then it's a touchdown. Like, everybody you talk to on the air, non-Steeler fans or whatever, everybody. I went into my office, and my office manager, she was talking to my other colleague, and she was saying it was a touchdown. She's a Packer fan. And so if everyday common folk can sit there and look at it and say that's a touchdown, then it's a touchdown. If it looked like a touchdown, smelled like a touchdown, it's a touchdown. Most kids, if you gave that to 10 kids, at least 9 of them are going to say it's a touchdown.
Right.
And so it's like, if they do that, then it's a touchdown. So I think, again, this says a lot about when Roger Goodell spent all his time on this other stuff and can't get this right. Get the stuff on the field right. If they're going to give you $40 million a year, you should be at least work with the committee to get the stuff. There's committees in all these leagues. There's rule committees in all these leagues. But commissioners are effective in getting the rules committee to see a better solution. All these leagues have rule committees. But commissioners have the role to manage them to a better decision. And that's what Goodell needs to spend a little bit more time of his time getting to. Not just for the Steelers, but it's just something – when something creates that much craziness, then you got to correct it. Now, the Rams are not the same old Rams. They literally went to Seattle. They took the team and the 12th man behind the woodshed. Yesterday, I turned on the game. Is what 34-0? That never happened in Seattle. Like the 12th man was like the fat lady had song, done the backstroke, and ran out the room at halftime. I mean, Russell was running for his life. I wanted to get him into the witness protection program because they was coming after him. I don't know what's going on in Seattle. Like not only the wheels fell off, just and the way they got beat, because I think Rams only had like 108 yards net passing. I mean, they just beat you the old-fashioned way. They just ran right over you. That's demoralizing. I play defense. When somebody just run over you like that, that makes you just go back and reevaluate whether or not you should be playing. What did you think when you saw that? I mean, I didn't even know what to say.
Look, newsflash, Ty Gurley is healthy, okay? So for those of y'all who
– I got him on fantasy. I love it.
Todd Gurley is healthy. He's very healthy. I love what the Rams have done. The Rams have quietly have a very talented team, okay? And with all of the hoopla, they're moving back to Los Angeles and everything. You got to understand, they were coming last year. You could see that talent on that team last year. They were just young, and they just had to get themselves about themselves. It's not surprising. I think what surprised everybody was the fact that not the fact that the Rams are as talented as they are, but you figured that with Arizona being down this year, with San Francisco being San Francisco, that it was going to probably be Seattle and everybody else. But now this team, again, the woodshed whooping, it's just indicative of the injuries that has been happening with Seattle, okay? They have been, like, getting by the skin of their teeth if you just watch some of the scores of how they've won ball games this year. And when Sherman went down, that was it for them, you know, as far as their defense. And the fact that they have struggled with their running game, and you're right, Russell Wilson's been running for his life. That's because they don't respect their passing game without a legitimate running game. Okay, and this is Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll's when he had beast mode over there, you had to respect that running game so that Russell Wilson can do what he wants to do with the passing game. They don't respect his passing game. They've lost a lot of key players off of that offense, and they're just not scoring points this year anyway. Okay, and with some of the key injuries that they've got on defense, and with that running game, the Rams have with Gurley, you have to respect it. So what happens? You start putting folks in the box to try to stop that running game and stop Gurley. You don't have to throw the ball that much. You just got to be effective, okay? And that's what Goff and that team is now. They're effective with their passing game. It's a very, very efficient game plan that they're running. That's a team that a lot of people aren't talking about. Outside of them being out in Los Angeles, nobody's watching them. But that's a very talented team, D. That team has been building now for the last 3 years. And people need to recognize that the Rams is real. That whooping ain't no joke. They just starting to come into their own. This team reminds me a lot of the team, the first Rams team that won the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner and them. They kind of came out of nowhere. But the difference between that team and this one, even though they had Marshall Faulk, and maybe that is a similarity, because they had Marshall Faulk, they've got Todd Gurley, and Gurley is real. He's the real deal.
And I appreciate him in fantasy, but you're right. And I think, you know, they got such an elite defense. That front four is just so dominating. That front seven, and the way they get after it, and their special teams. You know, we're a long ways from Jeff Fisher. 7-6 and 6-9 and whatever they got going on, and 9-6, 9-7, whatever they got going on. Like, we are far away from that. They put some really good assistant coaches around. They got some good veterans. They got some young people who are contributing. They're bringing Goff along the way. They're giving him a chance to compete because they feature Gurley, and then they let him play off of that. And he makes great throws, and timely throws. I mean, they really brought him along the right way. And, I mean, they just smashed. I mean, they had the defensive coordinator cussing folks out, they still weren't responding. And you still, even with those injuries, you still have Bennett, you still have Wagner, you still have some formidable folks who, you know, the week before had played all right. You know, yeah, sometimes you get hit, but not 34 nothing. Like, you didn't have a 34 nothing defense on the field. And you're right, and I've been worried about this for a while. Seattle set the blueprint because they had all them Pro Bowl linemen too, offensive linemen.
Uh-huh.
And then they got too cool, because this is what happened when you got to pay your quarterback, and then they had to play Russ. And so they have not replaced that offensive line. The offensive line has not been the same since they went to the Super Bowl. And even then, it was kind of depleting, you know, the second time they went. And so, you know, they have not, you know, replaced those Pro Bowl level linemen. They haven't drafted a free agent in a while. It doesn't feel like they've done enough to get that running game that would just make Russell even better. They bought a platoon of running backs in there that haven't played, but I think part of the deal is they're not strong in the line to open up holes for some of these backs. So you're right. I mean, they're going to have to really, they got to hope, you know, for, you know, Atlanta to stumble a little bit, you know, tonight. But yeah, man, it's hard to come back from something like that. That's one of them games where I don't even know if you show the film other than the first half, you know, because that should be enough. You're down 34-0, you watch everybody get beat up. I don't even know if you even throw anything out. That might be one of them films that you just bury. I know Pete Carroll is big into symbolism. That might be one of them films you just get out back in the stadium with everybody with a shovel or the practice field. We're going to bury this one. Like, you know, Pete Carroll's been known for those kind of things. We're going to bury it.
Yeah.
Right? And so this might be one of
them.
Might
still barely running.
That's a film session you don't even want to be in, man. I'm like, woo. You know, it's so bad. You might have some of the injured players in there yelling at you. You know, I mean, it was just, they could not get any help. It was like, Ken Easley ain't coming through that door.
You just think about the team, the Seattle team that went to the Super Bowl and lost to New England.
Yep.
And just the players off of that team that's not on this team anymore. And then you got an injured Richard Sherman that really held down that secondary. You know, they're struggling right now. You know, they are what their records say they are. They're an 8-6 team, and they'll probably finish 9-7 or maybe even 8-8. But that's a far cry, you know, especially with the successes that Pete Carroll's had in Seattle. But make no mistake about it, they've got to get some weapons around Russell Wilson. He needs some weapons, all right? He doesn't have beast mode anymore. They let the tight end get away. I mean, they don't have any weapons for him. I mean, I think they had one game they won. I'm not mistaken, they won a game this year. What was it, like 12-10 or something crazy like that?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not scaring anybody, okay? If that's how you got to win, you know. So and when they score points, everybody's eyebrows pop up. It's like, really? Y'all scored some points this week, but you know the nature of the NFL. But that's not gonna get it. And then when you got a team that's as talented as the Rams, that can run the football, that can throw the football, and you got to pick your poison. That's gonna make for a long day. You know, the Rams are at double digit win. They're for real. They've only lost four times this year. They're for real. And so people need to pay attention to. Just because they're on the left coast don't mean that's not a good football team.
You listen to RSG One Mike. You're here with Hank and Devon, and you know we've been touching on some of the issues of the day. You know, normally we'll go deep into one topic, and you know we'll spend some time talking a little bit about the first part of our conversation about this bowl season, looking at just a few highlighted games. But you know, we've just been talking a little bit about this thrashing that the Rams gave Seattle here on RSG One Mike. We're brought to you by Carbon World Health. Go out and see our good friend, Dr. Ernesto Rodriguez and his staff and at CarbonWoodHealth.com and let them know that the Real Sports Guys sent you. And you can also check us out at RealSportsGuys.com. You can like us. You can, catch us on Facebook and get your invite. You can catch us on Instagram. And also you can catch us on iTunes. You can download, listen at your own pleasure. Please check it out. In probably about another 10, 15 minutes, we'll be hitting into a couple bowl games we want to highlight and get a couple picks here as a first part of it. And then in our next show, we'll probably start talking about some of those New Year's Day bowls. So we'll get to some of that college football. Our last topic that we're going to talk about here in the opening Mike segment here that we kind of been just stretching out a little bit here to give you a little taste is that Jacksonville, I call it the Coughlin effect. I mean, this is another team that just, and I get their year later than many thought. Last year I picked them to win a division and they just fell apart. But even Blake Bortles is looking serviceable this year, but that defense is something else. They're getting after people. I remember when they went into Pittsburgh, boy, they got after them. I'm like, not too many teams can get physical with Pittsburgh and come in there and do their thing. They just been something else. And, you know, Tom Coughlin's, DNA and handprints all over this team, the way that they play. They've been really getting after it. How have you, reacted to Jacksonville? You know, we got our great friend of the program who's been on here, Lamar's been on with me a couple of times. He's been on Inside the Park a little bit. Lamar is from the upper Midwest, the only cat I've ever known. Two things. He likes Duke and he likes Jacksonville Jaguars. I was like, now the Duke one, I've seen enough people in the Midwest like Duke. So that wasn't a surprise to me, but the Jacksonville one, I'm like, what you doing up here liking Jacksonville? But for a long time they were just feudal. So he was just like, he was just cheering for nothing, but now they winning, and I know he going crazy, but are the Giants wishing that they could have kept Tom Coughlin even in the executive position? Like, like they're looking for a GM. It might have been great to have Tom Coughlin back taking care of that. I mean, what do you think about the job he's done and, just kind of kicking off here in Jacksonville?
You know what? You're right. But the one thing you got to give to Tom Coughlin, okay? Tom Coughlin has a plan, okay? When he he's a plan. He knows what he,
That's right.
Win championships in the NFL. Right, there is a blueprint. Okay, there is a plan that gets you there, and he's won when he wasn't supposed to win with the Giants because he stuck to his plan. I think the Giants missed a boat as far as would he be a good front office executive. But here's the thing that is lost a lot when it comes to the NFL and evaluating talent. Nobody is better than that, D. than a coach, okay? A coach knows what he needs. He knows what he's looking for. He knows what passes mm-hmm. the smell test, right? Mm-hmm. College coaches are better than this than anybody. Why? Because they developed their own programs, all right? Where did Tom Coughlin come from? Boston College.
That's right.
All right? He took his plan to the Giants. He stuck with his plans. He worked with a blue chip ownership with the Mara family who knew how to win championships, and they developed that plan together. He goes down to Jacksonville. All right.
And we got to start with the fact that he started out in Jacksonville. And he learned a lot. Remember his early years in Jacksonville when he was coaching
as a coach.
You know,
absolutely.
He had to learn how to tone it down.
By the way,
He had that transition. He had to learn how to turn,
you know,
it down. That's what he created that committee. Yep.
I'm glad you brought that up. Who was the only coach in Jacksonville Jaguar history to get them to the AFC Championship game?
That was Coughlin. And it was about to run him out, but he figured it out. He figured it out.
Yeah.
He ran. That's what he brought the players committee together. I mean, he had to really soften, learn, and take a step back.
Right.
You know.
I mean, you listen. This is a match made in heaven for this team.
Yeah.
Okay. They've got a man that knows what he's doing, how to do it. He's learned, like you said, he learned with the Giants as far as how that operates. And this is another team that people are kind of like, oh, they've been sorry for so long, let's just dismiss them. And I remember, I think one time I was on the show with you all, and it may have been you, it may have been Game Changer that picked the Jaguars, and I laughed out loud. I remember laughing out loud. When I laugh out loud the way I did, especially in public, I remember it, and I remember doing that. So,
you did laugh out loud.
I laughed out loud, and I think I laughed for a long time. I think you had to take a break. But anyway, I will say to you right now, I'm not laughing anymore, okay? They're 10-4. They're real. And it's kind of fun. If there's anything that we're missing out because of all of the noise that the NFL has brought us this year, is that we've got some teams right now that are really worth watching, but we're missing out because of the bull crap. You know, you got the Jaguars that are remarkable this year. We just got through talking about the Rams. And that's new blood. That's new blood that's being infused in the NFL that they can't even embrace because of the bull crap that's going on that they keep on, you know, tossing to the fans. Unless you're in Jacksonville, and they don't know yet in Los Angeles because they're still doing other stuff. But, I mean, that's where the NFL should really start to focus. That is a lot of fun for this season.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and they're playing tough, and they're getting after it. They're not backing down. They're not backing down at all. You know, they are demanding their respect. It's fun to watch these guys really get after it. And, you know, for a long time, you know, feel like they were the doorsteps of the league, and they're coming out and saying, no, we got this. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little College Bowl. We're going to dip into a little bit, you know, maybe make a few predictions on some of these early games. You know, I love bowl season. It's a great time to, get a sense, you know, especially when these guys decide to play, which is a whole nother issue. Maybe we'll touch on that. We have a number of players who are already opted out and said that they're going to get ready for the draft, which, you know, in some ways I can't blame them, but, you know, it would be nice for them to actually, you know, finish deal, but I'm not going to get mad at them. It's one of those things where, you know, they got the right. They got the right to be high. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of bowl football here on RSG One Mic.
Hi, this is Brett Bielema, the head coach of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, and you're keeping it real with the real sports guys. Whoopig.
Reclaiming my time. Reclaiming my time.
We always got to throw a shout out to two people, Brett Bielema. You know, even though he's no longer head coach of the Razorbacks, I just got to, you know, pay my homage to him because he's one of them guys who came on and hung with us early on. He always going to be one of our dogs, so I always got to throw him that shout. I'm going to try and get him back on. here soon, as he's in transition, and also the game changer, who's been reclaiming his time. He's getting toward the end of the NFL season. We can get him back as he has his season long boycott of NFL football going. You know, I'm like Jamie Foxx said in Ali. You know, I can't give up that. He's talking about how he can't give up the pork. It's hard. I didn't renew my red zone and all the other stuff, but you know, my Steelers zone, it's a hard thing for me to do. I'm down with Tomlin. All right, this is RSG1 Mikey here with Hank Davis and Devon Wilson, and so we're gonna get into the college bowl season, and obviously the four teams have been settled and decided, and we'll deal with that later. We were gonna talk a little bit about that. We'll deal with that later. We're going to talk about just some interesting games, and I'd like to get Hank's perspective, and you know, maybe we'll both make a selection about it. So we're going to start with the Camping World Bowl. It's number 22 Virginia Tech, the Hokies, against number 19 Oklahoma State. This could be a really good game. You know, you got to think about this is a really good postseason pairing. You got Mason Rudolph, who was one of the top quarterbacks in the country. You got James Washington, who's just an incredible ball player, and that offense that's averaging about 46 points a game. And going up against Bud Foster, who for a long time coordinator for the Hokies, who was that staple, that great Hokie defenses over the years. He's featuring the linebacker Tremaine Edmonds, who have been incredible. You got Jackson, the young quarterback there. You know, this is a stage, you know, a lot of more practices for him to get better and improve. And he showed some really good highlights over the year in developing. I don't know if you had a chance to kind of look at this. They're going to be playing in Orlando. This is going to be a pick-em, man. It's a tough game. This is, you know, what, especially we're talking about this kind of preparation that folks have to prepare for the game. Who do you have in this game and why?
You know who I have in this game? The last one who got the ball. That's who I have.
That's right.
Okay, let me tell you something, man. This game, some of these bowl games, man, they playing like hoop games. Okay?
Yes.
They're starting off real, real slow. And all of a sudden, somewhere between the middle of the third quarter to the end of the game, the offense has started to figure it out. Next thing you know, you got it 45-45 going into quadruple overtime. You know, that's what I expect. I really do expect this to be a track meet going up and down the field. I think young Jackson is going to have a tremendous game against that Oklahoma State defense. But look here, Oklahoma State, I think – the one thing that troubled me about Virginia Tech, I thought Virginia Tech should have been better than what they were, but they kind of like faded down the stretch. I'm going to take Oklahoma State in this game only because I think it's going to be a track meet, but I think that they're going to the Virginia Tech defense offense is going to have a hard time keeping up with Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I agree. I think I may have in my if we had a wager or whatever, hypothetically, I may have looked at Virginia Tech because it's one of those interesting underdogs to take. You know, they show up in bowl season. But I think when you think about someone like Washington, who's a game changer, you know, Mason's been in some very cold competitive games against, TCU and against Oklahoma, the level
right.
of competition, you know, I think – Bud Foster's a great defensive mind, but I think, you know, he's got enough snaps under his belt where there might be some big plays. And, you know, for them, they're going to try to end this season on a huge note. And so yeah, I think, you know, if you were to pick them, I think you're right. Oklahoma State is probably the better bet just because they're so explosive. I mean, you can only hope to contain them for a long – you can't. And I think if Jackson were a little bit older –
right.
match point for point, like next, you know, if it were the Jackson of next year, I think this would be an incredible game. And if they do win it, Jackson might be a Heisman Trophy candidate for next year, early candidate to be, you know, if he has a really good bowl game, you know, against a team like Oklahoma State. You got the Alamo Bowl. You got Stanford against TCU. I mean, this is the Coaches Bowl. You got Shaw up against Gary Patterson. You got Love at running back for Stanford. You got that, you know, TCU defense that is looking to bounce back and make some stuff happen. This one's going to be in the Alamo Dome. So in some ways for TCU, that's kind of like in their own backyard in the great state of Texas. But Stanford fans travel, and what they do with that running game and other things, that travels as well. And Shaw has some practices to get that defense tight. How do you look at this? You know, you got two great coaches who are going to have their team well prepared.
You know what? I've got to go with Stanford in this game. And the reason why is because I struggle with TCU. While they probably played the best defense probably in the Big 12, that's not saying much. You know what I mean? You're talking about a league that played literally no defense, and they played the best out of all of them. That being said, you got a Stanford team that's going to line up. They're going to punch you in the mouth. They're going to run the football. They're going to take care of the clock. Okay? And that's going to be very difficult for TCU to overcome. Secondly, TCU's offense, you know, they're known for that vaunted offense, has been known to disappear at times. I've seen it disappear twice against Oklahoma. I've also seen it disappear against Iowa State. Okay, and Stanford's defense is Stanford's defense. So with those components there, I think you take Stanford. I think you take Stanford by like two touchdowns.
Wow, that's an interesting thing. I mean, you broke that one down, and yeah, I think this is going to be a good one. Yeah, but you got Shaw, and I think he's been building, trying to get this team, you know, back on track and ready and competitive. And I think, you know, you giving him time to prepare, you know, in their physical. Two touchdowns is, you know, I think the Pac-10 is going to have a good showing here in the bowl season. We got a Pac-10, Big 10 matchup. We got Washington State against Michigan State. You know, this is going to be, one team is going to try and hit you in the mouth, and one team is going to try and run you out the gym. You know, when you look at it, you know, you look at Falk is thrown for 30 touchdowns and only 13 interceptions. He gets after it. You got Davis III, who's a receiver from the Spartans, got 8 touchdowns. You got Martin Jr., who's got 9 touchdowns. You know, Michigan State is trying to bounce back, get themselves back on, you know, on track, trying to get back to that competitive stage. You know, young team in many ways, trying to bounce back. You know, this is an interesting game. It's going to be in San Diego. San Diego County Bowl. There's a lot of games in San Diego. I wouldn't mind getting out here. I think when you and I get together for our little RSG retreat, we got to figure out next year where we're going to go, because we got to be at some of these ball games. And we might not go to the ones we usually would want to go. Like, we might have a Michigan or a Wisconsin because of our roots. We might need – I'd love to go to a bowl game like this, because first of all, the fans are going to be crazy. It's one of those things where we could really be in a space having a lot of fun. San Diego, right? But this is going to be an interesting game with pretty evenly set teams who are trying to – they need a win just to end this season on a really good note, right? This is what kind of one that gets you ready for next year and can kick marker for whether or not you're ready to go in it next year. So how do you pick this one? Who would you look at? I think many folks have slight edge to Washington State, but – you know, how are you seeing this?
See, this is one of those games, D, where you have to ask yourself, how good is Michigan State, okay? Washington State, let me start with them. You know, they're a different team when they play up in Pullman versus when they play anywhere else, okay? They had their first 6-7 ball games right there in Washington, and they looked like they were going to be a playoff contender. The minute that they left the state of Washington, all of a sudden they became a very mediocre team. And that even includes the quarterback, Falk. Falk had, I want to say it was the Arizona or the Arizona State game that Mike Leach actually benched him for a period of time. So I don't know which team is going to show up for Washington State. When we look at Michigan State, I don't know how good State is. Okay, is that the Michigan State team that hung with Northwestern or upset Michigan? Or was it the Michigan State team that got their doors blown off by the Buckeyes?
Okay, 48-3. You're right. Jekyll and Hyde.
And if that team shows up, okay, then you got a problem. Here's the thing. This is going to be a very close game. If Washington State shows up and wants to play, if Mike Leach got those guys primed and ready to play, they'll beat Michigan State. I think that Mark D'Antonio, with them coming back, he'll try to play with that chip on the shoulder thing going on. But they're better than their record indicates this year. Okay, I mean they're not as good as their record indicates this year. I don't think. Just the eyeball test don't do it for me. Okay, and I think they took advantage of some of the disadvantages of what were supposed to be elite Big Ten teams, with the exception of Ohio State. And this Washington State team can score points, and I don't know what sort of secondary Michigan State got. So this is a toss-up to me. I can see State winning this game, but again, I'm going to give them the edge simply because I know Mark D'Antonio is going to have that team ready to play.
You're right. When you take a closer look at this, they should call this the San Diego Jordan Hyde, because you're not sure Jekyll go up or Hyde. You're right. I mean, when Washington State goes away from Pullman, there's a couple times they've been taken behind the woodshed. I mean, Washington in the Apple Bowl, whatever they call it, whooped them. And a couple times they've been on the road. Arizona game got whooped. So both these teams have had their own share of blowouts where they've been blown out. So yeah, this is you're right. This is the Jekyll and Hyde Bowl.
Right.
The last one we look at tonight is Kentucky against Northwestern. Now, I've been very critical of the SEC people, because when you get beyond the top two or three teams in the SEC, they start to give everybody else the same love as they being coached by Nick Saban. And Kentucky's one of the teams I've been saying, even though I like the coach, I like how they've been building the program, but you know, this is an important game for them to really solidify themselves, you know, as a basketball school, but trying to also solidify themselves as a football school. They're going up against the Wildcats, who are looking for their third consecutive 10 season win. Fitzgerald, for what Northwestern has to offer and what it is to get in and everything else, nobody's done a better job than someone like Fitzgerald. He makes them competitive every year. This is a team that's bowl eligible, it feels like, almost every year. They're routinely, you expect them to have at least 8 wins every year, and then some years have 10. To me, if I'm a Northwestern fan, that's what I expect. You know, with every five, 6 years, we can actually have a magical run. You and I remember when they first broke through way back in the day, right, with Gary, made that run to the Rose Bowl, you know. Sterrell was a linebacker on that team. You know, now he's coaching this team, and, you know, they're trying to seal the deal here at the end of the season against a Kentucky team that I think is an upstart that's beginning to turn the corner. But what do you think about – what are your opinions about who might come out of this one? I think it's going to be a good game.
Okay, this is going to be a good game for a half, okay? This is the one thing, and I might be in the minority here, D, and I think that the Pat Fitzgerald is good for Northwestern. He keeps Northwestern relevant. And as long as he's over there, they will always be a relevant team. They'll get a couple of good wins in the Big Ten to make you kind of raise your eyebrows. That being said, Pat Fitzgerald gets on my nerves as a coach. He gets on my nerves as a coach. It's just like his game management towards the end of games just drives me crazy. I mean, he does stuff that puts that team more in harm's way than they should be. You know, he calls timeouts when the other team doesn't have any. You know, he take a knee, go to overtime, got a minute and a half left in the game. And all those things. And like I said, if you're a team that's trying to win championships or you're trying to get to that next level, Pat Fitzgerald is not your guy. With that being said, when I look at Kentucky, and like you said, this is a program-building game for them, okay? I think this is the second year in a row they're going to a bowl game against a Big Ten team, if I'm not mistaken. And I look at that team, and I look at, you know, here's Northwestern. They're ranked in the top 25. They're going in. They got this bowl. I fully expect Kentucky to upset this team. And if you mark my words, you watch that fourth quarter, if it's a close game in the fourth quarter, Pat Fitzgerald is going to do something to make you say, "But why did he do that?" He does it time. That's why they call them the Cardiac Cats. They're the Cardiac Cats because of the coach. I'm telling you. You don't believe me? Go watch those games down the stretch. And you played the game. And you've coached, it will drive you bonkers. But because he's a Northwestern alum and he's got them going to bowl games and they're not the Northwestern of old, he'll stay there till he's old and gray. But I will tell you right now, he's not Barnett. He will not win them a Big Ten championship, okay? He won't do it. But they will always get to a bowl, and that's okay with that fan base. But I'm taking Kentucky in this one.
And it's the Music City Bowl, so it's going to be – in Nashville, Tennessee, and so in many ways for Kentucky, it's more of a home game than it is for Northwestern. So they should have a pretty good turnout there of fans coming to see them, you know, and we'll see how the Northwestern fans travel there to Nashville. Shout out to my boy Bob Obrada and all the fellas over there. Nashville, y'all should, you know, get over there and see the game while you're down there and take on it. He called it. He said Pat Fitzgerald will find a way to lose that game in the fourth quarter. I'm going to be watching with that eye on it. Hank and I, this is RSG1 Mike with Hank and Devon. Hank and I will do what we call part two. We might even do it live. I might be in the same room as Hank next week. We might be doing it live from somewhere in A-Square, somewhere exclusive, where we might have the board up. We might even bring video into this one where you can actually see what we're doing. We might have to do it live on Instagram. You know, this is our annual. That's our first annual, our inaugural holiday show. I just called it that on the show. / RSG1 Mic Retreat, where Hank and I will be in the lab trying to figure out what next year is going to be looking like. And so we look forward to talking about the New Year's Day bowl games and some of the other ones that will be coming up next week. So stay tuned. Stay tuned for, you know, some of the other shows. Hank will be hitting you with another out inside the park with all this hot stove stuff coming on. Get ready for that. I'm going to get the guys back up for the big show. We'll be back. I'm going to get Phil off the bench shooting threes, and I'll get Game Changer. He's been trying to build his state championship team. So we're getting him back up here going. We're going to get the engine going here as we end 2017. And Hank and I will have a chance to reflect on the year. You know, we always do our little reflection on the year. We'll do a show where we reflect on the year and the things. And we'll also predict and have some of the headlines we think will be there for 2018. So we got a lot on the books. But I will drop the mic. I'm going to drop the mic by saying this. Look. We've been, and Hank put this out there, we've been enduring a lot of incredible and important conversations. And one reason why I started this show is because I really wanted to bring together the intersection between sports and society. You know, when I truly talk about the fact that we are the underground, one of the things I want to be empowered to do, to be able to do it our way and have these important conversations at the same time, do it in a way that's also entertaining and fun. We don't mind to have fun. We can also be serious, but we are in trying times, and I'm happy and proud to see our athletes, both college, pro, and high school, finding their voice in expressing who they are and pushing it. But at the same time, also playing hard in the field of play, that you can do both. And so we're going to do both here on RSG. We're going to push the issues. We're going to have fun. And we're going to give you everything we have. Until next time, this is RSG One Mike. Be blessed. Have a great day until we talk to you again.
Reclaiming my time. Reclaiming my time.